Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Welcome, Star Party people. We're back. It's me, Sandy.
And it's me, Bess.
Hi. Hi. So both Bess and I are sniffles from the stars. We're both a little sicky, but we're doing it anyway, folks. We're bringing
Capricorn
it.
Style. We're just going to like fly through the phlegm and create something magical somehow. So
we're pushing it. Push, Capricorn.
Yeah, that push feels so good. That's how you know you've got bones, you've got muscles, that resistance of Capricorn.
Yeah,
so.
I love walking uphill. Like, it's my favorite thing to do is just push against that resistance and walk uphill. It's more of an endurance thing than like a sprint or anything like that. That's why I love it. Just keep going.
I feel like you have good calf muscles. I haven't checked out your calves lately.
Oh, no.
But,
I mean,
no.
Although I was admiring them this morning.
Oh, see?
But they're not good. It's just that I've been like lifting my 30-pound baby around and I'm like, okay, well, at least it's doing something.
With your legs? No.
Well, yeah, every muscle,
Right. Oh, right. When you lift, it comes from everything.
Everywhere. Yeah.
So, that feels very Capricorn.
Right. Yeah. There's the Capricorn parent, because Capricorn and Cancer both kind of have something to do with parents.
Right. That structuration, that holding of life.
Yeah.
Holding up of all of it.
Wow.
Feels like the Saturn expression of the world card, that feeling. Mm. Well, I guess in most visuals of the world, the person's like dancing on top of the world, but there's others that feel more maybe with the almost like the Rockefeller. Where's the one with the
Atlas?
Dude holding the? Yeah, is there in Rockefeller, Center?
Yeah.
Well, sneak peek.
Like
there's going to be a sneak peek, Star Party listeners. There's going to be a New York City tarot deck coming out a little later this year, courtesy of Bess Matassa. So stay tuned.
We should start plugging all of our many books on this podcast.
Just a little library.
Between the two of us, it's like, come on.
Yeah, we're going to have to start a lending library or maybe just a selling library. Maybe not a lending
library.
Yeah, Capricorn style. All right, Sandy, let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Miss Aries, would you like to share your thoughts first? Although you just shared a bunch of them, so I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, I don't know if those were thoughts, what those were about your calf muscles, but it feels related. Well, I've got some thoughts about Capricorn. I think that you and I had a conversation. It wasn't on this podcast. It was offline.
Off the
IRL,
record.
Off the record. But I'm going to put it onto the record for the listeners. And it was about this idea of, quote unquote, the work. And I feel like this has like become quite a buzzy wellness, new spirituality, kind of a phrase. Like, are you doing the work? Oh, I'm doing the work, and he like, they're not doing the work, but I'm doing the work.
It kind of
how I sort of chafe about some of those kinds of like totalizing phrases. Yeah. And, I've been exploring it though lately where, and I think Capricorn has this traditional association with work, and we often sort of translate that into the mundane world as like, your job, your vocation, like the way that you sort of make yourself through the world. And I've never quite understood that. I mean, I guess I've understood it on one level, but I've always been intrigued by this more sort of esoteric, almost, spiritual expression of Capricorn labor and like what that means. And, I've been thinking, we were speaking in this off the record conversation about the different types of work. Like, we have this one idea that there's like self-work, the work that I'm going to do in myself, or like a situation arises and we see it as a reflection of an invitation of work. Like, something happens to us and we're like, oh, the way that we can give that meaning is to maybe narrate that there's some work for us to do in that area. Like, this event, this situation arose because there's work, to do on myself. And then there's like this other level of work, which is the work that's about other people that we don't know about. It's like a situation happens and maybe we're escorting somebody. It feels very Gemini, actually, like leading somebody through something. And it's not really about us. And we're kind of like, you know, I've had these situations before where I'm like, why is this happening again? Or I thought I worked in this area. And it's like, oh, sometimes it's about helping somebody else that we're not conscious of through, you know, an experience that's more about their work than it is about our work. And then there's this other level of work that I guess I would call, and I'm getting more and more comfortable. I feel like on this podcast, every time I say the word God, I sort of qualify it with, you know, the unseen world, spirit, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. That's what I mean. But I call it God. So I'm just going to call it what I call it in the name of like Capricorn season, straightforward claiming of turf. And like God's work. And I was having this whole thing where, you know, and you and I talked about it, this idea that sometimes things are working through us, like creation is working through us in ways that we're not even meant to be conscious of. It's like we're bodies upright here and currents and charges and experiences, like we're kind of bringing them through the vessel and sending them, you know, back out into space. And side note, there's a really amazing, if anybody likes country pop and like I do, I mean, I like a lot of pop music, but I love some country ladies. And Leanne Rimes has a new album or newish album that's called God's Work. And she's a Virgo sun, Capricorn moon. It's very fitting. And it's a spiritual record, but it's totally like, you don't have to be, you know, it can be about whatever that, you know, sub in whatever term for that. And so I've been thinking more and more. And then you, when we were talking about those three levels of work, you were like, well, wait, but there's a fourth work that's like, or fourth suggestion that's, there's no work. Like it's actually like, it's all just fucking whatever, you know? And I was like, oh geez. But I've been thinking a lot, you know, vis-a-vis Capricorn as like doing God's work on some level, or doing the work from the, it's like the last moment that we have in the zodiac to sort of materialize or to bring through or to sort of more consciously contribute in a way. And I don't know where I'm sort of landing with all this, but, you know, I was thinking about it vis-a-vis Jupiter and Saturn too, these kind of in-between planets that we have ruling Sag and Capricorn. And these really being sort of this liminal space in between like the personal planets where we're really wielding the planet and the far outer planets where, you know, we're sort of being wielded, you know? And so there's something about the unification of like the will that happens, I think, in those two signs. And, you know, it's like Sag, we talked about this on the last episode, like Sag, this is, it's like everything having a life of its own, having like respect for all kind of life forms in some way. And then, you know, Capricorn, we step into the singularity of like, okay, but I've got my own life force, life form, and what am I going to make of this? Like the last moment to make something. And this not having to be about tangible necessarily residue or legacy, although it can be. But I don't know. I'm going to stop there because I'm going off the rails with my brain. But like, I feel like there's something like holy about Capricorn opening up to let things work through them somehow. Yeah. Out of nowhere.
I mean, we see that in Capricorn individuals, I think, people with different strong planetary placements in Capricorn, where they're just pushing themselves and kind of being pushed. And it's a lot of times, it almost seems like, it's the wrong word, but it's like automatic is the wrong word. It's not the right word, but it's like providence, kind of. Like, it's like, I must do it. You know, like, I must do it this way. I must go do this thing. And there's usually some kind of definitive outcome that the person wants. You know, and then there will always be the other signs in the chart that are like, well, but what about doing it over here this way? You know, and then it's not like it's always just so like focused for people with a lot of Capricorn, but there is a focus that way, I guess. Makes sense. I was thinking a little bit about like Capricorn season, which I guess maybe in every podcast we've done kind of around this time of year, I probably say the same thing, because every time it comes to me, I think as a surprise where I'm like, oh, wait, this is the time of the year where we're supposed to like make all these resolutions and like do all these big plans for the future. And if you talk, if I'm doing a reading about Capricorn, I will usually use the word planning. And I get that that makes sense to me as like Capricorn plans, sure. But also Aquarius plans. And Aquarius has these visions and these big ideas for the future. And Capricorn, I think maybe, and this might be, you know, somewhere where I need to readjust my teachings about it, but Capricorn might be looking more at the past and the tradition. And, you know, and then I think, well, Cancer is about the past and the nostalgia, and Capricorn's about taking that and doing something with it in the future. But it's like, I don't know, every January, I just feel so not interested in really like pushing forward into the future.
Yeah.
And then maybe that's just me.
It's something that you and I think have spoken about with regard to earth signs and this sort of past inheritance or like the receiving. And like for me, Capricorn is so much about accumulation. Like it's not as much about futurism as it is the receiving of the gravity or the receiving of the downward current, you know, of, and that's not that to say that there isn't like doing that happens in it. Of course, like there's doing that happens in every sign, but I don't know. I've been getting more and more into these physical sensations of the signs and how that they physically sort of land in the energy. And it's like, it's just
that's
like pressure down, you know, like, and then kind of a resistance like with that and what that feels like. I don't know. Yeah.
Birth. Yeah, it's interesting because what, you know, I always think about resources with Capricorn and kind of this leadership where you can, you, as you said, you know, there's this accumulation of all the, you didn't say resources, but I'm going to add that in there. Like you're accumulating everything. And then Capricorn does kind of say, well, let's put a little over here and a little over there and you do this part and I'll do this part. So it's interesting. And then there's so many other things we could talk about with Capricorn, like our question, which is so good and so dialed in. So I'll leave that theme until we get into it. Yeah, I guess my like last, or maybe it's not my, it's the same thing I'm saying, but it's like, you know, put a little bow on it. is with Saturn ruling Capricorn, we think about like kind of trying to understand where we've been or like revisiting or kind of finding our alignment by seeing what we have or what we've built. And that we don't have to maybe in this season rush forward and go do it all new, but it's more about this kind of like checking in. And then I think in Aquarius season, maybe that's where we understand on a visceral level more about where we could bring that. And that has to come to us through an Aquarius style, which is like a kind of eureka moment. Like, oh, right, this is where, this is the idea. I can only see this now after processing and sitting with the check-in and kind of understanding what is, and now these fresh ideas are coming in. So for all of us who are making, you know, these New Year's resolutions, if that's fun, we should do that. But if it's like feeling a little forced or unsure, like we don't have to go forward. That could just be our culture. We, you know, I say this as Bess and I both showed up sick to record a podcast because we're like, we must push forward. But, you know, it's not like I'm an expert in any of this, people. But like,
yeah, the cardinal kids are like, you know.
Yeah, we have problems.
We have some serious problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mars and Aries need some like therapy over here about the pushing forward. Yeah. No,
that's why we have our therapy podcast.
Exactly. When we were just speaking, I was thinking about, you're talking about this transition into Aquarius, and you know, we'll get there when we get there, but this feeling of like the assessment, I love this word, and like there's a certain receiving that I think that happens, well, it happens in all Earth to me. There's a certain like receiving of our own bones, our own beingness, our own like the shape of us, like all of that. And it's like that assessment then allows us in Aquarius to, like, we look upon the world that we've made in Capricorn and claim it again as our own and say, like, you know, this is all of it. Like, this is the entirety of my effort here. And then in Aquarius, we are able to, I think, receive kind of the width of that, you know, this feeling of like that panorama or whatever that space is around it. But it's like, first, it's like we're in this kind of receiving line in Capricorn, where, you know, life is, or God, whatever, is like giving us back, like, look, you made this, Bess. Mm. Well, you made this, you know, like energetically. And you're like, oh, like it's that feeling of like a Saturn return, like walking through the rooms of your proverbial house and figuring out who picked out the curtains and who chose this, you know, way of being and like all of that. Like, I think that that's why for me, there's so much regality to the sign of Capricorn and this kind of idea of quality. Because I don't know, for me, so much of it is about that feeling of like receiving your own weight, receiving. And it's in some ways, and like you and I have talked about this like strange or maybe not so strange kinship between Libra and Capricorn. But I think about justice in Libra, and I think about, I don't know, like a certain, or the exploration in Libra about cause and effect, you know, and Capricorn sort of as a graduation or a continuation of that conversation around like the receiving of like the output or the whatever, you know, like the life experience accumulated. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well said.
Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. We have an awesome question.
Oh my God. It's a glorious, glorious question. All right. Let's bring it up here. All right. So our Star Party Capricorn listener writes, "Star Party means so much to me. The words you both choose hit me in the center of my being, and I am so thankful I found your podcast. Thank you for the work you do. It's beautiful to witness. My question has to do with my pervasive dread around death that haunts every inch of my existence. Every good thing can be negated or minimized by the idea of death being the inevitable last stop. Death stalks my relationships and my general outlook on life, and it sucks so much joy from me. I was raised in a cult, Jehovah's Witness. Through 10 years of therapy, I'm able to acknowledge how fatalistic beliefs have, to a degree, wired me to be the way that I am. But I know there is so much more to this story. Hearing your thoughts around my chart would be incredibly insightful. I would cherish your words, and I'm certain they would give me a fresh way to look at life and maybe death." Oh boy.
So
just good. Like
a great question.
Honoring the gravity of that question. Yeah. It's like, talk about Capricorn, the weightiness of an inquiry. You know, it's a really, you know, it's the ultimate question in some ways, you know, mm-hmm. the question to end all yeah. questions. All right, Sandy yeah. Citron, take it away.
Yeah. All right. Got? So this is the first time I'm looking at the chart, and there's a lot here. I'm just going to start riffing.
Riff away.
Riffing away. So, I don't know where to start. This person has Saturn rising. So Saturn being the ruler of Capricorn and Saturn is Cronos, who is Father Time. You know, that's one of the ways we can think of Saturn. Cronos is, you know, this symbol is like the Grim Reaper. So Saturn kind of says, hey, how much time do you have? And that's one of the things Saturn is always asking us, like, how much time is left? You know, I always think of like looking at a watch, like, are you kind of on time with where you want to be? And people who have Saturn rising tend to hold a lot of responsibility. It kind of permeates how they are in spaces and with other people, a sense of like, I'll be the timekeeper. I'll make sure we're all on track. I'll be the responsible one. So that's a big part of the personality. And, you know, but that's not really the whole, none of that yet so far is like the whole kind of crux of the question, but I think it shows something. And then I noticed that she has Mercury exactly conjunct Neptune. And I just thought about the sensitivity of that and how as a child, Neptune is about like the spiritual world and the fantasy and the visions and the ideals. And it's super sensitive. And Mercury is how you think and your whole mental framework. So how she grew up was really the visions and the messages. You know, I just think of the sensitivity, that's the best word. Like she just was a little sponge. That's what Neptune is. And just really soaking it up and soaking up a lot of other things too. Everyone's feelings and everyone else's fears and kind of becoming a repository or a little deposit, wrong word, but you I think you know what I mean. Like just a, holding all of the emotions and, you know, the sad emotions, and the unsaid emotions and her emotions. But sometimes that can be hard to put a finger on. It can be hard to track, especially if the emotions aren't accepted, which most often, you know, many of our parents and families will try to distract from the feelings or cover it up or say you can't feel that way or that's the wrong way to feel if you feel you're being bad. You know, so all of that can make it hard to put a finger on the emotions and they just kind of slip into little crevices and they're hard to find again. And I think that that sensitivity is another important note. I don't think, again, that that's the whole picture here, but you got the sensitivity and you've got the responsibility. And then as like a third kind of note, we see that she has a grand trine in Earth. So Moon in Taurus, Sun in Capricorn, and Mars and Jupiter and the North Node are all in Virgo and Virgo rising. So that's a really heavy Earth chart. So kind of, you know, what we were in a way reflecting back to what we were talking about at the beginning of like just what must be done in life and how to do it. And it makes the feeling of the body very important. And so for people who have a lot of Earth, the body and the actual container, the vehicle, becomes super important. It's like, I got this machine and it's got to get me where I want to go. I can count on that. And a grand trine is a sufficiency, or it's like, I'm sufficient in this. I can do this. It's a self-sufficiency. It's like, I can count on what I can do with my body and that it will take me where I want to go. And so kind of the flip side of that is like, well, what happens when it's gone? You know, and that, you know, fear of like, this is what I know I can count on. So that's just another thing. The fourth and final thing I think I'd like to pick apart, and I'm, again, just looking at the chart fresh. So, but the for topics around death, I would usually look at the eighth house. And she has Aries on the cusp of her eighth house. So already that is, that is like, I'm here to live. And I need to count on my spark, my fire, my flame, my decisiveness, my... I need to live. If I am is the, you know, kind of passphrase for Aries. It's like, I am. And what happens when I am not? And so then looking at Mars in the chart, Mars, because Mars is the ruler of Aries. So what's the condition of the ruler of this house? And it's not, it's Mars is conjunct Jupiter. So that's great. So there is a sense of like, yeah, I can live. Mars is in the 12th house. So my kind of thought here was like, and I don't really think this is helpful, so I'm sorry. But, you know, just having Mars in the 12th house, it's like a lot of how you do things is coming from the past lives. So there's like a past kind of sense of this life and death feeling. And of course, you know, if past lives are real, we've all died, right? Many times, if they're real, you know, and I don't know, I can't say if they are or not. But if they are real, we have died. And so probably some of those deaths were not so great. So this is, none of this is that exciting. But, you know, there's something here about like, will like having kind of a visceral memory of those deaths, whether or not that's conscious, a visceral kind of thing of like, hey, I know I only have so much time. And I'm, and this life force thing is so key and so important to me. Mars, though, is really well aspected. It's like conjunct Jupiter and it's trine the sun. And, you know, yeah, it's in Virgo, which is like, you know, and I would say maybe like part of the solution here, not that we need a solution. I don't think you're asking for a solution. Wonderful questioner, you know, like, but Mars in Virgo is like, can we just stay in the moment? And when we stay in the moment and we do the things, the little tiny things, then we feel really good. And so, you know, and that's hard. And I'm not saying that's easy. That's probably the hardest thing to do. And that, you know, is not like going to be an easy solution in any way. But you have so much luck and so much kind of focus that comes to you when you are really in the tiny little moments. And so I would, if I was you, take up gardening or bringing to life little tiny things, you know, in some ways, or working with, you know, things that make you feel alive, little detailed things that make you feel alive somehow. And sitting there and then knowing on the flip side that like, a lot of these fears, they're part like of kind of the ocean that you came up in with that Neptune conjunct Mercury and with the Mars in the 12th house. Like you can't necessarily, like the way to move them is not by, you know, sometimes Mars in Virgo is like, well, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to go cut out this like tiny thing and like take it away and extract it and then I'll be fine. And yet that's not going to work for you because it's just an ocean. And how can you like take one drop out of the ocean and have that do something? So I think it's about kind of just like continuing to like roll up onto shore and then recede back and feel the fear and then roll back up on the shore and be like, oh, I'm here again. And then recede back. And that to honor your sensitivity and to really be careful with how you're soaking things up now, because that is something that you can do something about, and how you're honoring the emotions of your childhood that maybe didn't get a place to be seen or heard. So those would be the kind of things I would say might help. And as you visualize this kind of oceany thing, it's like that's just acceptance. Like you're just swimming in this ocean. So those are my thoughts. Yes. I'll flip it over to you now.
Flip it on over. I feel like we're coming the closest to each other's thoughts in this chart reading for whatever reason. Yeah, we're really syncing up. But where I started, and again, I want to say like this is I think this is a question that, and I know that we have different, you know, everybody has sort of a different relationship, you know, obviously with death, but I think this is a question, and maybe this is cold comfort to the listener, but I hope it provides some context that every chart, you know, is inquiring around. It's like how to die, how to live in the face of death. It's just that every chart answers it differently. And I think that there's inherently in this particular chart a certain weight to it. And to, again, sort of to reference that physical expression of Capricorn and that downward current, to let yourself bend into that a little bit with softness, like not to, you know, obviously like force yourself to sort of lie flat and think about death all day and like, you know, but something about receiving yourself in that experience of knowing that's just sort of where you hold this question in your field, it has a certain weight to it. That a chart that would be composed of all air or all fire or would feel different. It would still feel death, but it would feel it differently. As a physicalized experience, it might be interesting to explore, you know, whether it's, you know, tolerating a weighted blanket or being able to sort of bury yourself partially in the sand. I'm not like suggesting you like, you know, jump into an open grave or anything or simulate your own demise, but like, you know, something around sweet and soft receivings of the current, the downward current of energy, I think could be interesting. And so when I started to kind of consider this chart, and it was before I had put the details in to see the whole of the chart, I only knew that this person was a Capricorn sun, but I started to think through the elements and feel into their respective relationships with death. And I think you and I, Sandy, have spoken about this on other podcasts in other ways, maybe around the idea of past, present, future, you know, but I was thinking, and of course, like, because I'm constantly alliterating or what have you, I ended up coming up with like this phrase for each of the elements that starts with the letter D for whatever reason. Well, I guess because it's death, but, you know, I was thinking like, what does each element do in the face of death? And fire denies it and defies it or seeks to defy it, you know, and that's basically the response. You know, people that are supercharged with fire are either like, I'm going to be the first person to never die, which is sort of how I've operated for most of my life, like in complete denial, and in defiant acts of seeking immortality, seeking to infuse meaning that's going to transcend death in some way, seeking to big up things in a way that like the I was here sort of tag on life, all of that kind of energy. And then water, for me, water dances with death. It doesn't resist. I mean, there's certainly resistance that happens in Scorpio, but there's a certain, almost a relaxation into an ether or into a fusion or whatever that is. You know, I know a lot of people that are super watery that, you know, love being asleep, you know, sometimes love sort of drifting off into a parallel, you know, don't have a lot of like I don't know that they don't have fear, but there's a softer kind of a receiving response to death and almost like a kind of taking the shape of it. And then I was thinking about air as to distance from death, to hold apart from death, you know, in order to inquire, in order to understand, you know, kind of death's place in the scheme of things, to comprehend, to perceive it. And then finally, I was thinking about Earth. And for me, Earth does death. Earth is the one element that actually does it. You know, like the body, like in Earth, like has to actually, it's in the dirt. Like Earth is dirt. And so before I pulled up this person's chart, I was really just like, oh, wow. Like, I wonder what other Earth is going on in this person's chart. And then I drew it up and I was like, holy shit, it's packed. It's packed. Like, it couldn't be an earthier. I mean, there's, you know, there's some outliers. There's Mercury and Sag. There's Venus and Aquarius. There's a couple little floaty things. But it's Saturn rising. It's Grand Trine in Earth, you know, and this is like a lifetime. And this may sound strange, and I don't mean this like flippantly, but this is a lifetime where you are doing death. Like, you are in some ways part of the work that you're here to do is that, you know, kind of visceral experience of relating to that principle, that, you know, that reality. And I was thinking, you know, and I think you touched on this too, Sandy, this idea of Capricorn as like the body's goodbye. It's the last step for the body. After that, we go into Aqua, Pisces, we're gone, you know? And so it's like, there is, I think, and for me, it's also why there's this association with Capricorn sometimes with like really high quality luxe materiality and, you know, things that have taken a really long time to produce and make, and, you know, truffles and diamonds and all of this kind of materiality that has grown over time, you know, tree rings, all of that. And I was having this interesting conversation. I think it was like right around the time that I first started looking at this chart, around a bonfire, you know, a few weeks ago. And there was a man there who was a Capricorn sun. I didn't know anything else about his chart. I was meeting him for the first time. And I was, you know, asking him what he was up to in life, what have you. And he revealed that he had been for like 20 years. He's a visual artist, you know, and, or a, I don't, he works through, you know, different modalities, but he, for 20 years or so, he had been a gravestone carver. And I was just like, whoa, like this Capricorn archetype to inscribe on a stone for the final, you know, this kind of final. And he was showing me all these scenes that he had sketched onto these stones to sort of represent people's, you know, he did these custom stones to represent people's passions and their experience of life. And it's like this feeling of this final moment of marking existence, you know. And I think just to extend that to you, listener, like that this isn't, you know, it's not, I don't want to say it's not a problem, because obviously like it's a struggle and it's a real kind of emotional, you know, it's a real experience, but there's something archetypally that really welcomes you into the marking of this final moment of you in this lifetime, you know, and rather than this high stakes, or, you know, that's not how your question describes it, not as high stakes. It's more of like a negating, that this experience of like everything is going toward this finite place negates the experience of life. But there's something about the honoring of you and the marking of this one time only experience of you in this incarnation. And I don't know what that shape that takes necessarily in terms of the acts or the kind of residue, but I was thinking a lot about the idea of residue, because I was noticing that all of your Earth energy, you know, with the exception of, you know, the Saturn rising, but, you know, it's very close to the 12th, all of your Earth energy in this chart is in water houses. And so there's this lifetime of invitation around erosion, around, I had this like almost vision of you, like, you know, those mandalas that people make, and then they construct this whole thing and then it dissolves over time, or, you know, some artists who erect things in physical landscapes that then get weathered. I'm thinking of like Andy Goldsworthy or some of the earthworks that are made by people. There's something, I think, to you, and I think it connects to, you know, what Sandy's saying about the gardening, like something where you can kind of erect these monuments or this engagement with the physical world that then you can watch sort of soften and change and erode. Because I think that there's naturally in your field, it makes sense that there's this feeling of futility in the finite, because all of the finite, the earth in your chart, is eroding. It's being welcomed into water, you know? And so something around, you know, maybe in the daily, having these deposits you can make where you can leave something and then see it weather over time, or you can contribute. I was thinking almost as like, you know, contributing to something like, you know, public art or something where there's something out in the landscape and you leave a piece or you leave an offering. You know, I'm thinking of like shrines or different, you know, kind of engagements in public art where you can kind of leave a piece of yourself and then watch that change over time. I was also thinking a lot about this relationship between the sun, Mars, and Pluto. I've gotten kind of hung up on recent months around this particular relationship almost being like what I would call the fight of our lives in our chart. Like it's like whatever Pluto is igniting, we feel like we, hell no, I won't go. And then life invites us again and again to release that on some level. And the sun and Mars, the relationship between sun and Mars and Pluto kind of describe what the fight of the life like feels like, the texture of it. And so I was really attentive to this feeling of Pluto, you know, it's right at the edge. It's almost in your first house, you know, which again is that amplification of like the obliteration of self, basically, or this feeling of a really, you know, a charged kind of experience of that. But I think when I was interpreting it in the second house, it was like the fight for constancy, the fight for the Taurus experience of like what does endure, and then amplified again by that sun in Capricorn, and then of course by this Mars in the 12th, which, you know, all of this kind of past incarnations, all of these, you know, I don't want to put too harsh of interpretation on this, but it feels like there's been many lifetimes, you know, if you're, you know, available to kind of tap into that energy, where there, it felt like there was effort made that was unacknowledged. You know, this Mars in Virgo in the 12th, like again and again, there was sort of a behind the scenes labor or an efforting and then a washing away, you know, of the effort, that mandala sensation. But Jupiter's there and the North Node is there. So there's this, I think, unexpected pleasure almost that can come, and exaltation that can come when there's a little bit of a release into that feeling of making an effort and then watching it wash away, not as an obliteration of it, but watching it blend and kind of become part of the earth. And that's why I was thinking about these artworks and things like that. And then similar to Sandy, I was having this experience too about the microcosmic and the granular and sort of embracing the relationship to this relationship to the kind of small immediacy of experiences. I was thinking of a lot about Sagittarius there too, and your Mercury and Sag, this kind of spontaneous, mutable energy that rises to meet and kind of match the moment. And then lastly, you know, kind of connected to that Sag energy, I think there's a invitation, and it's not to deny the, you know, the serious experience of the earth in your chart. I think there's a lot to kind of fold into there, but also not to forget about that fire. You have this, you know, strong fire placement, this Mercury and Sag conjunct Neptune, and to let yourself infuse things with meaning, you know, not just the experience of matter. And even if it feels a little like funny at first to be like, you know, marking moments, or, you know, even if you feel the futility and you feel yourself kind of chafing and rubbing against that edge, letting yourself have big, like, it sounds a little bit contradictory with the microcosmic, but also letting yourself, giving yourself the ability to sort of amplify those microcosmic things into something mega, you know, and marking those in some way. The marking feels important, whether it's marking physically on a landscape, marking in a scrapbook, something about that, and starting to kind of explore the residue. And, you know, I think with the regard to the granular too, I think there is an invitation here, to the extent that your nervous system can tolerate it, to move towards some of the details of death. You know, and that's not to say like, oh, you know, arranging all the specificity of your own funeral, or, you know, things that feel, but, you know, my sort of answer, you know, this might not be your answer, but I'm like, my relationship with death has been incredibly fraught. I'm like a total fire person. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to go. I am not, it's not happening. It's like total denial. But one of the things I've done over the years is make this like huge playlist. Now it's like, I think 24 hours long or 30 hours long. That's a playlist for my own funeral and like just all of the imaginings. And that might not be, you know, quite your vibe or what have you, but I think there's something about not being afraid to kind of think or feel into some of the details and some of the pageantry of that and some of what, you know, might be available to you in terms of arrangement, you know, to the extent that that feels tolerable. But yeah, I think there's just the offering to you in a nutshell is this experience of like the pervasiveness, the visceralness of this question. It lives very vibrantly in your chart. And this is a lifetime around receiving that on some level and softening a little bit into and around that. And yeah, I don't know. I hope some of that is helpful to you or meaningful to you, and I'll leave it there.
You're such a professional with your, I love how you already have the elements and the relation to death, like, you know, like you already have the most perfect and amazing little keywords for them. It's so good.
I don't know. It's all my like alliteration. It just like springs to life. Like where I try to beat myself out of it. Some of the editors are like, you got to stop with this, like, you know, triple, quadruple D's. Yeah.
Quadruple D's.
Quadruple D's, the double D's. Yeah. Oh boy. All right. Well,
that was, yeah. Thank you. That was great. Really. Yeah. I just love astrology.
I just love it.
Like lately, yeah. After every reading, I'm just like, I love astrology. It's just like, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's like, and it's this longtime lover where I think there's like ebbs and flows in the relationship. Yes. And I think you and I were talking a few months ago about like, oh, feeling like we need a different way in or we need a revival.
Yeah.
And then it's just like this. It's like this just very patient lover that's like, all right. And then it comes back in sort of a new, like we're re-romanced, you know, all over again.
I think it's like, it fits so well with a creative process, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe that ties in. Let's just make everything tie in. It's like Capricorn, you know, I think that there can be a sense with Capricorn of like trying to fit things into like a rule book or make it work for you, make it work, do it, keep doing it, do the work, you know? And it's like, there's something with the earth signs. They're also so creative and so, you know, so receiving. It's about receiving too and letting it come to you when it's the right time, as opposed to always having to run after it. I'm constantly amazed by my Mercury and Capricorn Taurus moon daughter, who's 1 year old now. And she's like, she lets things come to her, man. Like she let, and I know babies would do that anyway, but she's not a grabby baby. She's not the baby that's like, she lets it come to her. And I am impressed.
Yeah. There's something I had this visual when you were just saying that, you know, thinking about this listener's chart of the attendance, like attending or waiting for death. And like, you know, there's that's a different experience than someone that would be, you know, all fire and like, you know, out like combating or like racing past or whatever that is, that experience of like the unrolling toward an inevitability, but like awaiting without having to feel like what are you? And I almost imagine like almost being a servant or serving death in some way in life. And I don't know. It's not like you have to go out and be a gravestone carver like this man or, you know, sort of like unduly spike the nervous system into this forced relationship with confronting it. But there's something about, you know, even seasonal transitions or smaller deaths and honoring those kinds of fallings away of things. Like, it's not like you need to leap, you know, toward, you know, PhD and death, like at the end of the line here. Like, there's can be these like little sort of trainings, I think, for the body and spirit over time. Like, gardening is such a, you know, beautiful one that you suggested, Sandy, because you're also like dealing with seasonality. You're dealing with the release of things, the compost of things. It feels very Virgoan, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. That's that Mars in Virgo in the 12th house. Kind of like I like how you said, there was a word you used. I always forget the word, but it's like the serving at the altar.
Yeah.
Kind of idea. And it's like maybe an altar of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe some like a setup, some sort of communication, some sort of dialogue. I'm even thinking of this Mercury, you know, not that Mercury is just about communication, but this Mercury Neptune conjunction.
Exactly.
You know, can there be a talk? You know, can there be like a call and response? And I know that there's, I want to honor that there's a supercharged past around, you know, formalized this expressions of religion, you know, but they're like, what does that dialogue look like with death or with, the unseen or, you know,
yeah,
I don't know.
And knowing, you know, I think like a big part of this and that you're already doing, which is so beautiful, listener, is like taking care of yourself and really honoring like how much you can do, when it's right to do anything. Maybe there are times where you need to just, you know, like the healing is in doing nothing about it, you know. And when there are moments with your Mercury and Sagittarius, a lot of your a way to kind of change how you think is to get newly inspired, like to find inspirations. I find that Sagittarius wants, you know, a little quote or like a value or an inspiration of like, this is what I value right now, or this is what's important to me. And those kind of touchstones can help you a lot through this process.
Yeah. When you were just saying the thing about the action, I was thinking about, you know, if we think about Capricorn on some level as like accumulation, like, and, you know, there's an accumulation or receiving of the past and accumulation, but there's also sort of a trajectory of like, how much more can I amass or how much farther I can go up the mountain? And I think that there's an invitation here, and this might sound like a subtle semantic distinction, but I think it's an important one, between accumulative, like, I think part of the futility maybe, like your feeling of futility is coming in like the effort. It's like, well, why does any, you know, like the reach, like why does this gesture of like reaching, you know, it doesn't matter ultimately if like the ultimate end is a void. And I think there's an invitation here around maybe shifting consciousness a little bit from the reach and the accumulation outward to what I might call like a sensation-based world. Like experience more of that Taurus moon, you know, and the Taurus moon in this chart is almost conjunct Chiron. So there's a little tenderness in that spot around that, you know, and Pluto is in the second, you know, like there's some charge around the experience of Taurus, but Taurus gives us a non-accumulate, well, we might say that Taurus amasses things, but there's a sensational, and maybe it gets to what you were saying to Sandy about the Mars in Virgo being kind of the immediacy of the moment, the experience of just like very visceral sensation in the body and receiving kind of just like, you know, tangible pleasure versus the experience of Earth that's about like the amassing or the accumulating or the reaching toward on a trajectory. I don't know.
Yeah. So should we do a tarot pull in honor of Capricorn season? Or Capricorn,
let's seal it.
Energy.
Seal it out. See what cards want to come forward to amplify our understanding of this archetype. All right. I'm going to shuffle up and I'm going to pull two from the top and one from the bottom. See what we have here. Oh, okay. All right. So I've pulled all water cards, interestingly.
Wow.
Yeah. The Four of Cups, which is ruled by Cancer energy. The Ace of Cups, also in the realm of water, and the Death card, Scorpio.
What?
And yeah, so here we have it. And I think that there's a lot, and I think maybe I was sensing it with this sort of elemental breakdown. And I'm not a person who has immediate experience of water. Like water isn't sort of strong in my field. I experience it through other people, but I think that there's a lot that erosion idea or that kind of fusional experience of, you know, because both, for me at least, both water and earth are expressions of the downward current, you know, in our experience versus air and fire are the up and out, the projective current. And so there's something around this, like offering ourselves extreme tenderness, you know, around like, and it speaks, I think, to the Capricorn Cancer axis too. Like I often feel like Capricorn energy is almost like verticality. It's like us stacking our spine or stacking life, you know, and then feeling the weight kind of coming down. Whereas Cancer is horizontality. It's like kind of getting low in the flow, lying down sort of on life. And yeah, I think that there's maybe an invitation around working with Capricorn energy as that more sheltering end of the spectrum that relates it to Cancer, and that feeling of softening somehow. Like, and I don't know, there's like something around almost like the bittersweet or the bittersweet goodbye. Like if we say that Capricorn is the last moment that we have to mark the body before, you know, the body is no longer, like, I don't know, there's something about like the same way that we build a shrine somewhere or honor emptiness in certain spaces by bringing our presence, like to remember that that's part of Capricorn energy, is this kind of sweet send off of the body, and like a celebration of the final sort of deposits we can make here. And I don't know yeah. Where that's all leading. What do you think?
Yeah, Sadie? I think it kind of brings it back around to this like softer view of Capricorn that we need so badly. Like yeah. We just have really ruined Capricorn in a way with all of this, like, you know, billy goat climbing the mountain, and Capricorn's symbol is the sea goat, and it's got a little fish tail, you know, and it's like yeah. we've got to remember that there is this deeply emotional, intuitive side. And so I think that the cards, I mean, not that I can interpret them the way you can, but they remind me of that in a way.
Yeah. And I think there's like this feeling too of almost like that question again, which lives to me at the center of the death card, like also what is eternal, you know? And Scorpio speaks to that on sort of an emotional water-based level, but Capricorn speaks to that too in terms yeah. of the bones. Like there's something that keeps on, like the principle of gravity itself is eternal, yeah. or at least we think so. You know, I can't predict the future, but I think gravity will still be part of the future. I don't know. but like that question, you know, the kind of the monumentality of things, the preservation of whatever it is that's eternal, and that could be a material, you know, that doesn't break down over time, or some sort of charge that you know to be true through time that's going to transcend your own death, like all of that, so that we can let death in many ways. I'm like, you know, maybe if earth signs are doing death, maybe death itself is water. I mean, I guess it is because it's Pisces, you know, because that's where we go. Like we finish in water. So that's the outro of the zodiac. And so to let water do its thing, we got to sort of set ourselves up in intactness, and the intactness of Capricorn, whatever is going to endure, whatever is going to be rendered eternal. So we can let water do its erosion, because yeah. it's, you know, the inevitability of that and the softening into that. Yeah.
I think I'm going to take this as a personal suggestion to like just try to let January be more about eroding than about building.
Yeah. I mean, I've been feeling that really strongly in this season in particular. Yeah. You know, at the end of yeah. December, I was like in this kind of frenzy around like wanting to make all this stuff, because I was like, you got to get it in, and you got to put it out there before the end of the year. And it's just again and again, like my whole energy field was like, no, like this year. And I think yeah. it speaks also to the astrology of 2023, you know, which we don't need to get too deeply right. into this, but like, I've had this feeling and I can't quite figure it out. I mean, maybe it's this sort of the charge of the nodal axis switching into Aries Libra, or, you know, who knows, the chariot being our card
Pluto
of the year, Pluto changing, but it feels for some reason that this year, like the rhythm is going to be more explicit in the astrological wheel. Like I know we all like talk about, oh, the calendar year versus Aries season starting in late March, but it's almost like this year, and I've heard a lot of people saying the same thing, like they're really like, I'm going to actually honor, like I feel really called to actually honor that, like, and not to be like busting out until late March, like to actually let January to March be what it is in the zodiac, which is the tumbling into, yeah. you know, into the undoing. It's not the ultimate, you know, it's not the push that we're going to get, yeah. you know, in late March. And to, there's something about like every sign, I feel like this year being really like as it is, you know, and maybe that's the clarity mm-hmm. of that nodal axis switching into the cardinal, you know, Aries Libra. But something like, oh, actually like let this rhythm, like, oh, you follow, you know, astrology is part of your world. Like, okay, so do it actually, like actually don't resist yeah. the falling away of this final trinity of Capricorn, Aquarius, Pisces, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. I think all Mars right. retrograde at the beginning of the year is helping us all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stop and wait.
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Happy New Year, everyone.
yeah. Happy New Year. When does Mars is direct on January 10th?
Retrograde January 12th.
Oh, the 12th. No, oh, yeah. I was yeah. advancing it. My Mars ruled self was like, come
like,
on.
Hurry.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, honoring all the big questions, the monumentality of you, the meganess, the fears in the face of the finite, all of it, really honoring our listeners' question and, you know, the courage that it takes to even, you know, have that question be in your field and to bring it forth. Yeah, thank you so much. And we'll see you in the spaciousness of Aquarius, listeners.
Thanks for joining us. If you want to ask a question about your own chart, you can do so at starpartypodcast.com/question and visit my website, that's sandycitron.com, for courses and mini readings and regular astrology readings. I'll be doing one question readings on new moons and full moons, so sign up at my website, sandycitron.com. And Bess Matassa's website is bessmatassa.com. We'll see you soon.